Hi everyone, I'm Sarah Anderson. I'm a lecturer in criminology at Edinburgh Napier University and one of the authors of the Criminal Justice in Scotland textbook that was published by Routledge in August 2025. This series of podcasts accompanies the textbook, and today my blether is with Kate Alexander, who's the director of an organisation called Scottish Detainee Visitors. Despite the title of the book, Criminal Justice in Scotland, today's focus is going to be a bit outside of the criminal justice system, so the immigration system and detention there. So, hi Kate, thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much.
So, can you tell me a little bit about Scottish Detainee Visitors and your role there?
Yeah, Scottish Detainee Visitors, we're a very small charity. We've got just two part-time members of staff, me and my colleague, and our role is to support people in immigration detention in Scotland, and we also, with our partners, work to influence policy on detention, looking to achieve detention reform and ultimately an end to immigration detention.
Great. So can you explain a little bit about what immigration detention is and what an immigration removal centre is?
Okay. So immigration detention is essentially, it's an administrative procedure. It's not a criminal procedure. It's a system that allows the government to detain people that it's seeking to remove from the country. Is essentially what we're told that it's for. So they do that in places called immigration removal centres, one of which is Dungavel, which is where SDV visit. And these are essentially big buildings that hold people indefinitely, as it happens, under the authority of the Home Office.
So you said it was administrative procedure rather than a criminal procedure. So are you able to just explain what the difference is between that a bit?
Basically, the decision to deprive somebody of their liberty through immigration detention is done by a civil servant. No judge has to look at it. It's essentially done by somebody in an office ticking a box.
Can you describe what Dungavel is like? So in what ways is it similar to a prison, or in what ways is it different?
Right, well, Dungavel has quite an interesting history. It was it used to be a hunting lodge for the Dukes of Hamilton.
Very nice.
It subsequently had a short life as a youth offenders institution. It's out in the middle of nowhere in the countryside, and it does look, you can see that it was once a kind of big country house. It's quite prisony now. It has a large barbed wire fence around it, and, you know, it's staffed by people in uniforms who carry keys, which rattle. Doors are locked and unlocked all the time. So in that sense, it does feel very prisony. I'm not that familiar with prisons, although I have been to them from time to time, and I was struck when I went to a prison at how much greater the security is if you go into a prison than it is when you go into Dungavel, which is not to say that there is no security in Dungavel. There is. You're searched when you go in there, and as I say, it's people in uniforms and jangling keys and all the rest of it. They're very keen to say that it's not prison. The regime is more relaxed. People who are detained there will tell you that the staff tend to be friendlier towards them. People in detention have access to their own mobile phone. It's not a good mobile phone. It doesn't have any internet connection or a camera or anything like that, but they can phone their lawyers. Where it differs as well from prison is, as I mentioned briefly before, there's no time limit on immigration detention. So people who come to detention, as some do from prison, might initially find that it's better to be detained in Dungavel because the conditions are perhaps a little better and the staff are perhaps a little nicer and they've got a phone. They don't know how long they're going to be there. You do know how long you're going to be in prison.
Okay. And is it run by the Scottish Prison Service? Who are the staff there that work there?
Dungavel's run by Mitie, which is one of these giant kind of outsourcing. They're all run by those kind of companies.
So companies that do potentially run prisons or
yes.
Other forms of detention in other areas of the world,
yeah.
Or other areas of the UK.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, to start with, what does your organisation do with people there?
Basically, we provide befriending support to the people that are detained there. We're not lawyers. None of us are lawyers. We can't provide legal advice. But we do provide signposting to people, make sure that they do have a lawyer when they arrive in Dungavel. But generally, just go and talk to people and make clear to them that there are some people that care about the issue of detention. I sometimes describe our role as being about support, solidarity and witness. So we offer individual support, the fact that people from the community come into the detention centre to visit people indicates the kind of solidarity that people feel with them on the outside. And also I think we do have an important witnessing function. We're there every week. Mm. We're the only organisation that's there every week. And we do see what's going on. And sometimes we see some very interesting things. Mm. Most of the time we don't, but sometimes we do. Mm. And that's something that can be shared outside.
Okay. So do the people who are there, do they have lots of other visitors? Or
a lot of people who are detained there may have family, friends in other parts of the UK, so it's difficult for people to visit them. I mean, I said earlier that Dungavel's in the middle of nowhere. So it's 6 miles from Strabane, which is, you know, south of East Kilbride, and there's no public transport to the centre. So even if you lived in Glasgow, even if you lived relatively close, it's quite difficult for people to visit. So some people do have friends, family that go and visit them, but a lot of the time they don't. So we might be the only people that they see who aren't connected to immigration or to the detention centre.
Okay, and so you've mentioned a couple of things there. So you mentioned to start with that people might have come from all over the UK, and I noticed you said the UK there rather than Scotland.
Yeah.
So why is it that people come from so far?
It's operated, Dungavel's operated under immigration law, which is reserved to Westminster. It's the only detention centre in Scotland, but there are similar places in England, mainly ringed round the major airports in England. Dungavel's the only one in Scotland, but people do come from all over. Often we see people who have been detained in, say, Northern Ireland, but there's a short-term holding facility in Northern Ireland where people can only be held for up to 7 days. So once that 7 days is over, they might be sent to Dungavel as the closest place. Mm. Similarly, there's another centre like that in Manchester. So people might go there for 7 days and end up in Dungavel if they're held for longer.
Okay, so people have moved around the system quite a bit, are they?
Yeah.
And who's there? I don't know if we covered that, but is it men, women, children?
It's mainly men, some women. It has capacity to hold 150 people, and there are 12 bed spaces in there for women, but the rest are men. No longer children, unless a mistake's been made, and as far as we're aware, that hasn't happened for some time. When I first started going to Dungavel a long time ago now, as a volunteer, children were detained, and we fairly regularly visited families with children in Dungavel, but that practice was stopped in 2010.
And why was it stopped?
As a result of campaigning. Basically.
By organisations like SDV.
Yeah.
Right. Another thing you mentioned then is, I think you said, you know, some people who were in Dungavel had previously been held in prison. Mm-hmm. There are connections with the criminal justice system, but that's not everyone, is it? So what are the different pathways into Dungavel? How do people end up there?
I mean, basically, people subject to immigration control could potentially end up in Dungavel, and the main routes would be somebody who's newly arrived and in the country,
yeah,
and the immigration service wants to establish who they are and whether they have a right to be in the country. The second route is somebody who's here and has been in the country for a while but may have overstayed a visa. They may have been through the asylum system and been refused and reached what people call appeals rights exhausted. They've been through all their appeals. And the third route is foreign nationals who've served a prison sentence and have either had a sentence that was 12 months or more, or have, for some other reason, the Home Office has decided then keeping them in the country is not conducive to the public good.
Okay, so there's different routes. So yeah, I think it's quite important for everyone to kind of understand those differences, because I think there's a lot of confusion between, when we talk about immigration control, a lot of confusion that all immigration is about asylum seeking.
Exactly.
And that all foreign nationals in prisons are potentially in the country without the rights to be there. And it confuses quite a lot of different issues, doesn't it?
It does. And I think currently Dungavel is used a lot for people who have previously been in prison, although that's changing. But yes, they come from different routes. And I think it's important to recognise as well that these categories aren't really discrete. So we meet a lot of people who have very complex immigration histories. So, for example, they might have entered the country as an asylum seeker and then got in trouble with the law, which may or may not have been linked to their immigration status, and then they ended up having a prison sentence and then ended up in detention following that. But they've still got some of that complexity. And similarly, people may have arrived as a student and then the situation in their country, home country, changed, and they applied for asylum, and then they were refused asylum. So that's how they ended up in. So it's people's situations are quite complex.
Okay, so it's a mix of people there, yeah, with a mix of histories,
yeah,
often quite not fitting neatly into any one, yeah, particular category.
Yeah.
But there is, the reason we were interested in this is because a lot of people have come from the criminal justice system.
Mm.
But I think for people listening to this, really important to bear in mind that there are other people in,
yeah,
in Dungavel who've not had any criminal justice contacts and perhaps are just overstayed visas.
Yeah. I think it's also worth saying in that context that, you know, we meet people in Dungavel who've been in the country for a very, very long time, sometimes since childhood, and who, for whatever reason, haven't regularised their immigration status. And they might end up, you know, after getting in trouble with the law, might end up in detention, mm-hmm, with the Home Office wanting to, they would call it, return them to a country that they've never been in since they were, mm-hmm, a child. And that's really not uncommon. But that kind of not knowing what's happening to you is a very familiar theme that we encounter with people that we meet in detention. People don't understand the situation that they're in, and, you know, they're given all this information that's in incredibly bureaucratic language, and, you know, they just don't understand what's happening to them.
Okay, and some people do have the experience where people have been in prison and they expected to be released and weren't aware that they were actually going to...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not aware that going to detention was a possibility after prison. As you know, Sarah, I fairly recently did a PhD looking at fathers in immigration detention, and most of the fathers that I encountered, who I interviewed, had been in prison and then ended up in detention, and none of them knew that it was a possibility that they would end up in detention. It came as a complete surprise, and these were people with strong family ties in the UK. So
they often had children in the UK,
yeah,
and expected at the end of their
prison... British-born children.
And British-born children expected to be here,
and be
released into the community, and they were...
We meet loads of men with British-born children in Dungavel. Happens a lot.
Okay, so I think you did mention a bit there, but let's clarify it. What determines whether someone would be moved to Dungavel at the end of their prison sentence?
Right, well, it's all slightly shadowy. People who have a sentence of 12 months or over are issued with a deportation order. That's a kind of mandatory thing that happens if you have a sentence of more than 12 months. However, there is a presumption against detention. So there's some sort of process that goes on in the Home Office immigration to determine whether somebody poses risks should they be released on bail. How those decisions are made is a little bit obscure to me, but it's not definite that somebody who falls into that category with an automatic deportation order would definitely go to detention. They may be released on bail.
So they might still be going to be deported.
Yeah.
And by deported, we mean sort of forced to leave the country.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't necessarily be held in Dungavel afterwards. And that's something to do, you're saying, with about an assessment of their
Assessment of the risks that they pose, the imminence of their removal, mm-hmm, and that might be affected by the situation in the home country or the country that they were attempting to send someone to. Or it might be to do with the personal circumstances of the person concerned. They may have Article 8 rights to allow them to stay in the UK.
By Article 8, you mean?
Rights to private and family life.
Okay, so that's the European Convention of Human Rights.
Sorry.
For the audience.
Yeah, so there are several kind of factors that might come into play. Mm. So the people that we see in Dungavel who have been in prison have been through some sort of process that assesses this. My experience, or the general experience, is that the Home Office is fairly risk averse, to put it in their language, or fairly keen on detaining, to put it in mine.
Okay, so we laugh, but it's actually not really an assessment of whether these people are likely to cause serious harm or not, always, but can often be. There's a willingness to, an eagerness to detain people.
Yeah, I think a key point is that all of these people that we're talking about have finished their prison sentence, and if they had the good fortune to have a UK passport, they would be released, and the risks that they pose managed in the community. And that's not the case for the people who are detained.
Okay, that was really helpful. When they're in Dungavel, are there any differences in how people are treated depending on the pathway they took to get there?
Not as far as I'm aware. I mean, Dungavel will go through its various risk assessments or whatever based on whatever somebody's history is. So there may be, if there was somebody with particularly violent offences or whatever, perhaps there would be procedures put in place. But no, I mean, people are detained and they're detained in the same circumstances, same room, same accommodation, all of that.
For those people who've come through the criminal justice route, what do you know about the experiences and challenges they've faced in the criminal justice system before they get to Dungavel? So what do you know about how things were for them as they before they even ended up in detention?
Not a great deal, if I'm honest. Mm. However, it's certainly more difficult to get access to legal advice when you're in prison than when you're in detention, simply because it's very difficult to get... I mean, you've got a phone in Dungavel, you've got support from various welfare teams or whatever that will help you to get a legal representative. Somebody in my research actually described trying to get legal advice, immigration advice in prison, and said it takes you about a week to get access to a pencil. So being able to actually further your kind of immigration case is really difficult when you're in prison, slightly easier when you're in detention. And as I said, people will tell us that the conditions are a bit better in immigration detention than they are in prison. Mm. But I don't know an enormous amount about it, I have to say.
So you don't know much about the experience of foreign nationals in Scottish or UK prisons?
Not particularly, no. Although they can be held, some people are held under immigration powers beyond their sentence. You know, they might not be sent to a detention centre. Some people are held...
So they're held in prison after their sentence has ended?
After their sentence, under immigration powers. That's being done less than it was in the past, but it is something that still sometimes happens.
And prisons are overcrowded.
Yes, indeed.
Anyway. Okay, so that was the challenges beforehand, and we've talked about this. So for everyone then, not just maybe those people coming from the criminal justice route, what are the main challenges that people face while they're in Dungavel?
Well, the first thing I think is isolation. I've said it's in the middle of nowhere, so it's very difficult to see your friends, family, lawyer. Those kind of things are difficult. People have access to Skype, so they can speak to people in that way, but it's really not the same as speaking to people in person. The second thing is the impact on people's mental health and even their physical health. I mentioned the indefinite nature of detention, and I think it's really impossible to overstate the impact that that has on people. The UK is the only country in Europe that doesn't have a time limit on detention. And sometimes we see people when we visit, we'll meet somebody who's just arrived in detention. And people are shocked to be detained, whichever route they've come from. But they can feel quite, you know, mistakes have been made, I'll be out of here soon. They can feel quite sort of optimistic about things being sorted out. And then they'll meet somebody fairly shortly after they arrive who's been there months. And will obviously wonder if that's a fate that's going to befall them. And here's another difference between prison and detention. People describe being in prison, you count the days down until you're not going to be there anymore. In detention, you count them up and you don't know how far that's going to go. So that has a real impact on people, and you can see people deteriorate under that stress. All of these things mean it's really difficult to spend your time in any kind of constructive way in detention. Again, in prison, you know how long you're going to be there. So you could do an O-level, you could do an A-level, you know, you could spend some time learning a skill or whatever. I know these things don't work as they should, but there's a kind of possibility of doing it. If you could be there for like a week or 6 months, you can't plan that time in any kind of sensible way. So people feel that those kind of activities are kind of useless, really, in a way. So there's that. It's difficult to find legal advice. In Scotland, it's slightly better than in England, because although people are detained under immigration law, in Scotland, it operates within the Scottish legal system. So Scottish solicitors are representing people in Dungavel, and we have a slightly more generous legal aid system here than in England. So they're in a slightly better position. But we're finding, certainly now, that most of the lawyers who work in this area are working at capacity, and it's quite difficult to get someone. At the moment, everyone we're seeing is legally represented, but it's taking much longer for them to find a lawyer to look at their case. So that's stressful. You know, that's your best chance of getting out of detention, resolving your situation, and if you can't find somebody, it's very stressful.
You said they have a Scottish lawyer, so what happens if they're moved to an immigration centre then another part of the UK?
That can be tricky. Sometimes Scottish lawyers don't want to represent people when they've moved, and it can be tricky to find an English solicitor to represent them in court. So I mentioned earlier that people are moved around the system, and that's disruptive for any legal case. But between the two jurisdictions adds another layer of complexity for people, particularly if they're about to be removed, and you know that needs to be challenged in the courts. So that can be that can be an issue for people. I mean, one of the things that, because of Dungavel's location, because it's in Scotland, most people who leave the centre are moved to another centre down south. So often we don't know what's happened to people, whether once they'd been moved to a centre down south, that meant that they were deported, or whether they managed to get out of detention. But yes, you know, often people's, we don't know what's happened to them. Sometimes, though, we bump into them in the street, and that's quite nice.
Yeah. So people are released from immigration detention out into the community eventually, because I thought the point of it was to facilitate...
Well, exactly. It doesn't work. Yeah. And more than 50% of people who leave immigration detention are released back into the community. So it's spectacularly useless at doing what the government says it does. And that figure has been... fewer than 50% have been removed from the country for the last 10 years. So this is a long-standing issue that it doesn't do what it says it does.
So the majority of people will actually be released?
Released. There'll still be a risk of detention. So basically what it's done is it's held people for weeks, possibly months, at great expense to you and me as taxpayers, and has achieved nothing apart from traumatising somebody and leaving them with kind of ongoing trauma and greater fear that it'll happen to them again, without actually addressing any of their immigration issues, really.
So, in your opinion then, or in the opinion of SDV, like, what alternatives are there to the use of immigration detention? What could we do instead?
What we could do instead is help people to address the immigration issues that they have. We talk a lot about community-based alternatives to detention, and, I mean, it's a slightly tricky concept because they're not actually, it's not really about detention at all. It's about working with people in the community and addressing the legal issues that they have. So it's about providing support, legal support, to look at the options that somebody has to stay in the country. And there are various examples of these kind of systems that work abroad. We've had some pilots in this country as well. And the kind of research evidence that we have about these systems is that they are cheaper. They're more humane, obviously, because you're not locking people up. But also, they provide better outcomes for people if they assist in integration, if somebody's given permission to stay. But they also increase compliance with a negative decision. So people feel, if they've been through some sort of process like this, they've been through a proper process, that they understand, they're more likely to leave the country of their own accord. So they have all sorts of benefits.
So what kind of things are these, how do these pilots kind of run, what do they look like?
The last government ran some pilots, one that worked with women who might have been detained, but it rerouted them out of detention and gave them kind of intensive advice about their legal situation. Had promising results. It was being run during COVID, so it worked with fewer women than expected, but it did seem to offer some really good results. There was another one that's called the King's Arms Project, which is slightly odd, odd title. I can't now remember where it was based, but somewhere in England. It was an existing kind of advice project that worked, that did this specific piece of work looking at immigration advice. And again, what it did was offer targeted legal advice to people who were had immigration issues, also help them with other kind of social issues, benefits and so on, to get them stable so that they could address their immigration situation. And it found that a really high proportion of the people that it dealt with had a viable route to stay in the country, so had potential options to resolve their immigration status, which obviously would mean that they could become citizens and start contributing in a useful manner to society, which is what a lot of people want to do.
I guess some people listening to the podcast might be wondering about people who've come out of prison and potentially that feeling about what, you know, thinking about, well, alternatives that kind of control risks. But I guess to raise the point again that you mentioned earlier, that everyone else who'd been through prison on the same sentence would have been released into the community. And so this, you know, there's the existing system to manage a risk of people.
Yeah, and actually some alternative to detention schemes have, you know, worked specifically with people with criminal records. There's a programme run by Detention Action, who's an organisation based in England, that has worked with people with quite serious convictions, but also with barriers to removal. So it's difficult to return people to the country that they come from. So those were people who were at risk of being detained for very, very long periods of time. And Detention Action have a programme to work with people like that to get them released from detention and given support in the community to prevent reoffending and to, you know, integrate.
That's an interesting point. What do you mean by if they've been given a deportation order, for the purposes of people listening at home, like, why is it that they might have a deportation order but might not be able to remove them?
It might be because how dangerous the country that they come from is, or it might be because that country won't accept them back into the country. So, I mean, this happens quite a lot, that people just can't be sent to the country that they're from.
And I guess that doesn't even take into account those people who have, might have rights to stay here because of family and because they've been here a long time. So, in terms of, again, I think you've covered this, but I think it's, or you've started to cover this, but it's important to bring it together, I think, for people listening about who it is that's making decisions that affect the lives of people in Dungavel. And of course, there's those everyday decisions. Mm. There's those decisions about whether they're held in Dungavel or released. Mm. And then there's those broader decisions about the laws that set that kind of framework. Yeah. So it'd be good to talk people through those kind of key people or key bodies that are making those decisions.
Yeah. In terms of kind of day-to-day, I mean, obviously there's people who work in the detention centre who take decisions about, you know, what happens to somebody in terms of where they're located in the centre, you know, whether if they need to see a doctor, you know, if they need to be taken to hospital because something has happened to them, those sorts of decisions would be taken by detention centre staff. They'd also have somebody, a caseworker, an immigration caseworker, who would be taking decisions to do with their immigration case. So that would be decisions to detain them and also to maintain their detention. So that would be a kind of civil servant working.
And is that person based in Dungavel, or are they based a long way away?
They're based somewhere else. They might be in Dungavel, but they're based somewhere. They're generally based somewhere else. Often people haven't met them. So they would be dealing with their actual specific, an individual's case. In terms of the broader sort of policy environment, those are decisions taken by the Westminster government, and we'll all be aware at the moment of much noise in the media and political sphere about immigration issues. And often those kind of decisions are taken at that sort of, these sort of times of great tension.
Yes. How is it then working between those two systems? Because we also, and that must affect the people in Dungavel as well, so their criminal justice experience will be determined largely by decisions made by the Scottish Parliament and Scottish law. But it sounds like some of the decisions around immigration detention sit in Westminster. So how is it for you, I guess, working between that, how is it for what are the kind of tensions between those two systems?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the Scottish government is much more friendly towards immigration issues than the Westminster government. That's changing a little bit lately, but generally it is. So, you know, we get, as an organisation, and organisations like us get quite a nice hearing at the Scottish government. You know, they're actually very keen to work with us, to use whatever influence they have on Westminster. But Westminster doesn't really listen. So, yeah, so it's an interesting one.
Has that changed over time with your experiences of working with the Westminster government, or has that...
Well, do you know, there was a period... I mean, I mentioned earlier on that when I first started going to Dungavel, you know, we saw children in there. We also used to see pregnant women. And, you know, the centre was much bigger then. It held 250 people at the time, and it was often nearly at capacity. So we went through this period of between, I would say, 2015 to 2020, where there was a kind of a period of sort of modest reform around detention. And that was after quite concerted work from organisations, not really SDV at the time, although we were involved, but organisations based in London started looking at detention in a way that hadn't been looked at before. So, you know, things changed. There were fewer people being detained, a number of detention centres closed, children were no longer detained, there was a time limit put on for pregnant women, those pilots into alternative detention were commissioned and so on. So, you know, there was lots of good stuff happening. There were lots of MPs there were MPs right across the house in Westminster who were interested in detention and keen to see detention reform. And that's kind of changed. I mean, it started to change in, like I say, around about 2020. So it started to change during the last government. And this government has, while it made some good changes when it came in, it's really gone very much for kind of immigration enforcement in a way that's a bit disappointing.
And by this government, we're talking about the current government under Keir Starmer.
Yeah.
The current Labour government.
Yeah. The last Westminster election brought in over 300 new MPs. Most of them know absolutely nothing about immigration detention. So we're kind of back to where we were maybe 10 years ago in terms of, you know, getting an interest in these issues.
And getting people to understand the negative effects it has.
Absolutely. And that there are alternatives. There are ways of doing this better than, yeah.
So the final question then. So thank you very much for your time. This podcast is targeted mainly, although not exclusively, at students, and they might be looking to think about what they do afterwards, the world of work after university. So can you tell us a little bit about your job and what it's like to work in the policy and advocacy sector, what it's like to work in or run a small kind of third sector organisation as well, to give students an idea of the kind of opportunities there are out there or the kind of challenges as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting working in the kind of policy and advocacy sector. It's quite I work 3 days a week, so it's not the whole of my job, but it's part of it that I find really interesting. In terms of running a small charity, some of the challenges of working for a small organisation, I have to be aware of things that in a larger organisation would be very much the role of an individual person. So I have to know about pensions, I have to know about payroll, I have to know about compliance with charity law. So these are things that aren't part of my job all the time, but I do have to do them. So that can create a certain amount of anxiety. However, I have a very good board who are there to support, and there's various kind of sector bodies that can offer support and advice. But it's an interesting role because you have to be a jack or jill of all trades.
Yes. So it's difficult if you've got this. You've got one area of expertise, which is around the kind of policy work, understanding what's going on in Scottish Government, thinking about the ways that you might influence that, understanding what's going on in Westminster Government, thinking about the ways you might influence that.
Because I come from a kind of research and policy background, so I'm more familiar with that world, although I've become familiar with some of the kind of things that you have to do to run a small organisation. And the nice thing about it is it keeps things varied.
Yes. Lots of different things. But you've stayed with SDV for a long time, so clearly there's something about the role that you get a lot out of, or the organisation and the work.
Yeah, I mean, I might have sounded a bit negative about running a small organisation there. One of the very nice things about it is that you have quite a lot of autonomy and quite a lot of freedom to do stuff. I also have a lovely colleague who I work closely with, and you know, we both have quite a lot of autonomy in our work to manage how we see fit. So it's very unbureaucratic in the way that I think would be quite different from your work, for example.
Yes. So lots of good things about working in a small organisation, and then something to think about there about working in policy and advocacy, so the types of roles that might exist to help thinking about how you can get government policy to work better for the people, the groups you're interested in. So some really interesting kind of pathways for students to think about there.
Yeah, and if any student was interested in volunteering, that's always something that's available as an option. For we do have volunteers who come from Edinburgh. So,
and so what do volunteers involve? This will be on the Scottish Centre for Crime and Justice Research website, so it'll be heard by students across Scotland.
Okay, well, we have most of our volunteers come from Glasgow and the surrounding areas because, you know, that's most convenient for getting to Dungavel. But we do have a group of volunteers in Edinburgh and some in Stirling. So the main volunteering role is being a visitor, and the way that we do that is we go in car shares. We go twice a week on a Monday and Thursday, groups of up to five, so it's quite a social thing, and we travel out in the evening. It takes about an hour to get from central Glasgow, a bit longer from Edinburgh, and we spend maybe an hour and a half talking to people in Dungavel and come home.
Talking to them about anything that...
Yes, I mean, it's interesting, you know, I suppose this conversation, it sounded quite grim, and sometimes it can be grim when you're talking to people in detention, because they're in very difficult situations. But sometimes what people want is to have a nice conversation with somebody who's come from outside. So there can be lots of conversations about football, lots of conversations about films. You know, people are interested in our lives, you know, in the lives of people who come into the centre from outside. So
I think people don't always want to sit and dwell on the negative experiences that are happening, just want to be able to chat to someone.
Yeah.
And that's a really important function if you're isolated as well.
Okay,
well, I think I've taken up enough of your time, but
it's been nice.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been really nice chatting to you. So thank you very much for your time and your thoughts, and I hope that was useful for everyone listening at home to understand a little bit more about immigration detention and how it does and doesn't fit and what ways it links up with the criminal justice system. So yeah, thank you for your time, Kate. Really appreciated.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is produced to accompany the textbook Criminal Justice in Scotland by Jamie Buchan, Sarah Anderson and Katrina Morrison, published by Routledge. Many thanks to Kate Alexander for speaking to us, and to Edinburgh Napier University and the Scottish Centre for Crime and Justice Research for their support and advice. The interview was by Sarah Anderson. Jamie Buchan produced the episode.